15, description of the kingdom of God, page 31. Pratigya. Everything in the Vaikuntha planets is completely spiritual and personal. Every living entity has a form, and the Lord himself resides there. The Pratigya of this chapter is expressed in this excerpt from Srila Prabhupada's purport of verse 16. In the Vaikuntha planets, the land, the trees, the fruits and flowers, and the cows, everything is completely spiritual and personal. The trees are desire trees. On this material planet, the trees can produce fruits and flowers according to the order of the material energy. But in the Vaikuntha planets, the trees, the land, and the residents, and the animals are all spiritual. There is no difference between the tree and the animal, or the animal and the man. Here the word murti mat, personal, indicates that everything has a spiritual form. Formlessness, as conceived by the impersonalists, is refuted in this verse. In the Vaikuntha planets, although everything is spiritual, everything has a particular form. The trees and men have form, because all of them, although differently formed, are spiritual. There's no difference between them. Right? Because yesterday what we were discussing about the, in the Haladini Shakti, then that has the visesha, right, or uniqueness. So that's the whole point, is that everything's spiritual. So that's the Sandini potency. Right? So that, in that way, they're all the same, all equal. But there's visesha, there's difference in that equalness. Right? So therefore, then the activities they each perform is different. Mm-hmm. And that gives that, therefore, unique result. Yes. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right.
Are we talking about spiritual world?
Yes, spiritual.
Is this the same here?
It's the same here. But the problem is, as Prabhupada points out, here is according to the order of the material energy, only they give fruits and flowers in a particular season, a particular situation. You know, it's like if the weather's proper, it rains properly, the heat's proper, you know, the dirt that the plant is in is proper, then it gives the fruit in a particular way. But if any of those are wrong, then we either don't get fruit or it's of inferior quality. But in the spiritual world, at all times, at all places, then the desire trees give all these things all the time. Does that make sense? So, but what I'm meaning here is that the spiritual, that's the Sandini potency, that's the existence. So their existence is purely spiritual. So on that platform, all living entities, whether they're in human form, animal form, plant form, they're all equal because they're all devotees, and they're all, their forms are all spiritual. But the difference is that uniqueness, that the humans do one thing, plants do another, animals do another, so they all have their unique service that they do, that therefore creates that happiness for Krishna through the Haladini potency. Does that make sense? Right? Because their activities, therefore, their form is unique, but there's no difference in the quality of the form. But because the form has its unique shape, therefore it does a unique activity that generates, therefore, a unique result, which adds to a particular pleasure of Krishna. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yes.
So that way then you get all these working. Well, in the material world, the existence is temporary, and therefore the activities that are done will give temporary results that therefore don't really satisfy the soul. Even if you get what you want and you actually, in one sense, are satisfied with it, right? which is a rare thing. You know, this is the time when you, you know, crack up and go, yeah, come on, okay. Yeah, yeah. And though, so then, but the soul won't be satisfied. Does that make sense? So the idea here where we're trying to talk all these different platitudes of goodness, you know, everybody's equal, everyone's the same, everyone's this, they're nice because they, that comes from the spiritual platform. But the problem is they're trying to do it with that which is temporary. You know what I'm saying? So you can't say, yes, everyone's equal. They all die. You know, like that. You can. You know? Everyone's equal. They all are miserable. You know? So, like that. But, so in that way it is. But the visesha in the spiritual world is complementary because it's all about Krishna. While here, the visesha, we try to enjoy it ourselves, someone else is trying to enjoy the same thing, there's always a fight. You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, Germany decides this side of Poland is nice, Russia thinks that side's nice. Yeah. And there are no Polish anymore. Right? There's no Poland anymore. You know? So that's the problem, is that everybody wants the same thing.
And not even Germany or Russia are satisfied. They start
They want what they have. Yeah. So then, and they both end up with not having either of it. So does that make sense? That's the difference here. Is even though everything's based on these ideal platitudes, the difficulty comes is because it's not taken far enough to the platform of the soul. Therefore, it doesn't work. So that's why Prabhupada is saying is that welfare, the real welfare is giving Krishna consciousness. Now, since you have to give Krishna consciousness through something, then giving it through these platitudes is fine, as long as it's understood the Krishna conscious element is the prominent, and these are just the cultural aspects of expression. Yes?
It's not uncommon that you see materialists saying, I'm fine, you know, I'm satisfied.
Yeah, they are. On one level, but then you know, check in the evening when they're sitting with their friends. Mm. You know, they're all just sitting around going, wow, life's great. Yeah, this is fabulous. That's only when you ask them. It's just like you go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Like, probably gives the example. You go to the hospital, the person is laying on the bed.
Yes.
There's a million tubes everywhere. You know, they're in the ICU, right? And you ask them, how are they doing? They'll say, fine. You know, you say technically they're one heartbeat away from being dead, but, you know, but they'll say I'm fine. That's how it goes. So that's just a natural reaction, especially like I say that the Western culture. That's what you're supposed to say.
Yes.
If someone says, "Oh, how are you?" You're not supposed to say, "Oh, I'm terrible," unless the person's you know close. At, okay, what's wrong? You want to talk about it? You know.
Yeah.
You know, so, but otherwise, you're just not supposed to say. You're supposed to say, yeah, I'm fine, or you can say, yeah, okay, you know. But that's.
Okay. But when the conversation is going and we're not thinking about are we fine or not, then actually it's a lot of problems.
Yeah, yeah, then all these things come out. Yeah. Then you see all these things come out. Yes.
In the last commercial, what I feel is the age of the body is increasing, and people of my age, they're afraid to accept anything different from what they've done before, because that will prove all their life is a loss.
Yes. Yeah, that okay, that's a good point. You see, there is also is that they don't want to say things aren't fine because then they have to admit that, you know, walking up and down the stairs is a problem and, you know, so many things are...
And they wasted most of their life.
Yeah. So only when they eventually end up in a, you know, old age home, then they talk about all these things. You know. But it's not necessarily a pleasant thing.
They tend to pretend.
Yes, that's the whole point. You pretend that everything is nice, everything's good, like that. That's the whole. Because it's, you know, it's like, what do you call it, the saying, growing old graciously.
Yes.
You know, you just accept that it's there and it's part of the thing, and then it's just accepted by others. If you don't accept it, they're going to harass you for it. You know, it's just like a dog. You're afraid, they'll chase you.
Yeah.
You're not afraid, they don't bother you. So it's like that. You're dealing with basically an animal culture. So they're just going to take advantage of the, you know, how you say it? It's Darwin's theory. You know, like that. You're not fit enough, then you're a problem, you know. Okay, is that yeah? Okay. Vriti, a philosophical elaboration upon the Pratigya. In the Vaikuntha planets, all the residents are similar in form to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They all engage in devotional service to the Lord without desires for sense gratification. In the Vaikuntha planets is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original person and who can be understood through the Vedic literature. Right, so here we see is that the whole point is that you're in Vaikuntha and it's all about the Lord as the central. But he's understood through the Vedic literatures. So that's the flavor in Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha is about this aspect of understanding the Lord, appreciating the Lord because of his greatness, because of his godhood. You know, that aspect. So through the Vedic literatures is there. While you see in Goloka, that starts to soften. It's not, it means partially they know him as the Supreme Lord. But generally we see is that him being the Supreme Lord isn't on the Bhagavan platform. In Vaikuntha, it's on the Bhagavan platform that he's the Lord. While in Dwarka, then he's on the Paramatma platform, he's the Lord. And on the Bhagavan platform, then that's where they have their personal relationship. You understand? Well, when you go to Braj, then that Paramatma platform drops off.
Yes.
So there is no element of knowledge. So as you see, like in the prayers of Devaki and other Dwarkavasis, that they'll talk about him as the Supreme Person and everything. At the same time, they'll talk about their personal relationship. So it's a mix. It has both these aspects. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Maharaj, so in Vaikuntha, everybody looks the same.
Yes.
And in Goloka, they're all different.
Yes.
I'm wondering why they're all the same.
I'm
looking at
the same. You never went to high school? The more you look the same, the better. Yeah. Except for the queen bee, don't look the same as her. That's a mistake. But anything just below that, you know, then... I'm sure you can tell the difference.
I saw one picture from Norway. There were four boys, and they were expressing their doubts towards like school uniforms because it was important that everybody had their unique kind of look. And they were all dressed exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah.
Except one boy had his hair this way, the other had the hair
that way. Yeah, major difference.
So that was.
Yeah, yeah. That was also the counterculture in the 60s, right? So the hippies, they're unique, different, not going. And then in the Harvard Lampoon, they have this one guy walking one way. You know, I mean, you know, just perfect, you know. The long hair, you know, the round, dark sunglasses, the little bit of a beard, you know, the long sleeve work shirt, the bell-bottom pants, the work boots, and the way he's walking and everything like that. And as he's walking this way, it's like he was the epitome of, you know, the perfection of hippiness.
Yeah.
And he's walking one way. It's also all black and everything. And then as he's walking this way, there's another guy exactly like him walking the other way. You know? So it's the same. Whatever it is, everybody who's alternative, they all look the same. You know, all the punks look the same, all the goths look the same, they all look the same. You know, all the motorcycle guys, they all have the Fu Manchu mustache, they all are a little fat. You know, they're all exactly the same. They all have their, what is it, ball peen hammer, you know, hanging off their pants. You know, it's all the same. They all have to have Harleys, right? It's not that one guy shows up in a Suzuki.
No, oh,
it doesn't happen. No.
That would be his last day.
Yeah, you can maybe show up in an Indian, but you know, or something, or a Norton, but, you know, but you could do it, but you know, not a Suzuki. You know, it's just not a Honda, even worse.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is that when you have the similarity, that creates a relationship based on that. You know what I'm saying? So whatever is the common element, if it's the clothes, it's the motorcycle, it's the music, it's the food, it's the commonness that brings them together, that makes the basis of relationship. So here, then, the transcendental form is the same. It makes that as the basis of the relationship. Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't have to worry. I'm sure they can tell the difference. You know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, just like you have parrots. They all look the same, but they can tell the difference between each other, right?
Parrots. Yeah. Why parrots?
Americans? Yeah, they all look the same. Yeah, so wherever you are in the world, they think anybody else all looks the same.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I forget. When somebody was just in China, the Western devotees, and they addressed him by someone else's name. They said, you know, like that. And then the other one turned the other, they all look the same. Yeah, but they can tell the difference.
They can tell.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So here, as we were saying, is on the Bhagavan platform, they know him through the Vedic literature. And it's through the Vedic literature they're glorified, the prayers will be offered in that way. Very formal, like deity worship, how we're doing. That will be done in that formal way. You know, the exact time this is done, that's done, the various mantras, ceremonies, everything like that. So that's what. So if you see like the Shris, like how they have their programs and festivals, that's basically how Vaikuntha is. It just, you know, increase the opulence. You know, that it's just you don't have that opulence here.
Yeah.
You know, that's basically like that.
Mm-hmm.
He is full of the uncontaminated mode of goodness, with no place for passion or ignorance. He contributes religious progress for the devotees. So that means out of his compassion. So all the elements are there, they're just very formal. So that's that element of sweetness and compassion is there, but it's over, you could say, overpowered by the majesty and formality. It's not that it's not sweet, like that you've heard that prayer, what is it? Madhuram, it's all about Madhuram. You know that one.
Yeah.
That I know of, that will be one of the, I think it's a Sri Vaishnav prayer or something like that. So the whole point is...
It's one of the Alvars.
Yes, one of the Alvars, I think. Yeah. So, in other words, the sweetness is there, but so within majesty, they see the sweetness. But for us, it's the sweetness is the majority, so it's not about the knowledge. But here, Vaikuntha, it is.
So it's... Principle and detail is switched.
Yes. In those Vaikuntha planets, there are many forests which are very auspicious. In those forests, the trees are desire trees, and in all seasons, they are filled with flowers and fruits, because everything in the Vaikuntha planet is spiritual and personal. 14 through 16. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur categorizes verses 14 to 16. In Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala's chapter 4, entitled The Factual Truth of Krishna. Considering the Thakur's classification, it's understood that for the impersonalist who denies that the Lord has a form, the option to see the Lord face to face is never available. For the impersonalist, the Lord is always covered by his Brahman effulgence. But the devotee, accepting these statements of scripture, everything in the Vaikuntha planets is spiritual and personal. All the residents... are similar in form to the Supreme Personality Godhead, who is the original person, sees the Lord's face to face. Jiva Goswami comments in his Priti Sandarbha, Anucheda 10. In the final liberation, the devotees attain a spiritual nature and form like those of the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. This is described in the following words of Srimad Bhagavatam 3:15-14. Vasanti yatra purusha sarve vaikunta murtaya. Ye nimita nimitena dharmain aradhyayan harim. Here, nimita means result, and anamnimita means without cause. These two words together mean without the desire for material sense gratification. Right. So if you're having something that is without cause, it means it's without a desire for sense gratification, right? Because in the material world, everything is done for a cause. We want something from it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that it's done without that desire, then that then is the spiritual platform. So that's the animita. Right? Nimitta means you're getting a result, because nimitta means you're dealing in the in an activity, and that activity then will generate something. But if that generation of that result is not for any purpose, you know, personal purpose, then that's what we see in the spiritual world. Right? So, as the impersonalists, they'll think there's no activity because they want no result. But because it's still about themselves, they want the result for themselves, then they don't want a material result for themselves, so they do nothing. But for the devotee, they want a result, but not for themselves, but for the Lord. So much higher. So the impersonalists are still self-centered, like the karmis. Just, it's on a platform of renunciation rather than sense gratification. Dharmena means by devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So dharma, the actual dharma, means the nature of the soul in relationship to the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So when we're talking about dharma, most of the time people talk about what rules and regulations I should be following. And what's the reason for that? Right? So the level that they're dealing at is just actually my existence. My existence, let's say, as a Brahmin, I do this. And this person, as another Brahmin, does that. Or there's a Vaishya, or should they do this. So it's basically all existential. And the reason that you're doing that is because I will get the auspicious result. You said that's why the piety still is weak. So that's not actual full understanding of dharma. When you understand I'm a servant of Krishna and my activity is to please Krishna, then in my position, whatever that is, I will engage that in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? That's actual understanding of dharma. So if it doesn't get up to Krishna, it hasn't actually got to the highest form of dharma. Does that make sense? Yeah, because otherwise, let's say, okay, now we're generally in most social circles, the idea of just, you know, self-centered sense gratification is not something as a discussion. And they may do it on their own, you know, it means it's hinted at, you know, but it's not an accepted form. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Right. So we get to the idea of ideals, right? So we get to the idea ideals. Okay, let us see to that there's a nice situation in which everybody can benefit. Okay, that's great as an ideal. Okay, now what am I supposed to do to obtain that? What's the next person supposed to do? Where does that come from? That doesn't have any definition. Whoever is somehow or another in a leading role, they'll define it. And because they're looking at it from what their own benefit, how they like it, and their conditioning, someone else, a different conditioning, will say no.
Everybody knows.
Yeah, everybody knows. I mean, it's just like you have you ever seen the picture where you have this line of I think they're National Guard, and they're there with rifles. Or machine guns. And there's this one hippie girl going with a bundle of flowers and sticking a flower in the end of each of the guns. You ever seen that one?
Yeah.
It's a very famous.
Yeah.
Like that. So you have that, and then you have the other guys that, you know, would rather blow something up and say, now we're getting it. Now that's progress. You understand? So, and they're both part of the same movement.
Yeah.
So that's the problem, is that how do you define dharma? You define ideals of dharma, but there is actually no dharma. So that's why it's called upadharma,
yes.
Or this lower level. And then what they do, that's actually chala. It's cheating.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So only when you get to manamoya, then you have dharma, then it's defined by shastra, who you are, what you do. You know, it's just like if you look in a manual, it tells you what each part of the machine does, what each button does.
Mm-hmm.
That's dharma. Right?
Yeah.
Then you have to have the higher level of understanding that we're not the body, we're the soul. So therefore, I'm doing this dharma, that benefits the conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the soul? So these don't do this, don't benefit the soul. So the tendency is I don't do it because I'm still self-centered. So only when whatever platform you're taking, you bring it up to it's for the Lord's pleasure, and you're using the medium of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, then it becomes Sad Dharma. Does that make sense? Yes. Before that, it's Dharma. So that's what Krishna is saying. Give up all these varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. That doesn't mean you give up and do nothing. It means give up it as its own.
So that's actually Upadharma.
These other, yes. Yeah. Anything else is all Upadharma, technically. You know, I mean, if you're working on the material platform, if it's not based on the scriptures, then it's Upadharma. Yeah. Yeah. But technically, if it's not based on Krishna consciousness, it's considered sin.
Yes.
It's impious. And if it's connected to Krishna, it's pious. So that's the highest definition. So we understand how the mechanics... It's just like, let's say, the person is cutting vegetables. He just goes in, cuts vegetables, right? Every day he cuts vegetables. He goes in and cuts vegetables, and he leaves. Okay?
Yes.
Now, after an hour, the cook comes to the kitchen and looks at the vegetables. But they're cut. He did his job. But are they cut how he wants it for the cooking? Not necessarily. He just cuts vegetables. So whatever he feels like, he cuts them. He cuts them big. He cuts them small. He cuts them long, short. Cuts some big, some small. You know, cook's nightmare. You know, all that kind of stuff. Does that make sense? So now he's doing his duty, you could say. But actually, it's only really his duty when it's a connection to the overall, which is the cooking and the people eating. Does that make sense? So it's not that he gives up cutting vegetables, but he cuts the vegetables now in consideration of what's going to be cooked, and that what they're going to be cooked is who's going to eat.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So in the same way as our activity of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha is not given up, it's just seen in connection with bhakti. So you can say in that way, these lower dharmas are all given up because we identify them as separate duties on their own. But they're only parts of the duties of bhakti.
Yes.
Does this make sense?
Yes.
So that's the idea of pure devotional service. Right?
Yes.
Okay. Here the word Vaikuntha means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Vaikuntha Murtaya means numberless forms of the individual souls who reside in Vaikuntha. So actual Vaikuntha means without any material problems is the Lord. And the devotee, because they connect to the Lord, they are also therefore on the same platform.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So that's another point, is that they all have the same forms because they're connected to the Lord. So that also shows that. Why that form? Why not, you know, Michael Jackson or something? <You know? laughs> Right?
Yeah.
So then, you know, can you imagine? Of course, the glove business would go out of, you know, the problem, right? Does that make sense? So the same form, then, but it's connected to the Lord.
Yes.
That's the... Okay, so Vaikuntha is the Lord, and then Vaikuntha Murtaya, those who are connected to the Lord, the devotees. And who are manifest from tiny fragments of the effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many liberated souls, each with his own form, and there is one Supreme Personality of Godhead who has his own form. Still, the liberated souls have forms that are like the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 15 summarizes questions and answers. Question 68 of Srimad Bhagavatam is asked by the demigods of Brahma Deva. 68. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.15, 2 and 9. What is this expansion of darkness in all directions? Please look upon us mercifully, for we have fallen into a miserable condition. Because of the darkness, all our work has been suspended. Brahma continues his answer to the question in the next chapter. Earlier questions this chapter answers. Question 53, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.15.5. I have repeatedly heard about these higher and lower statuses of human society from the mouth of Vyasadeva. Question 54, Question 58, 315, 23 to 37. Please relate the events of creation after the Virat Rupa stage. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 15th chapter, the Devas ask Brahma to speak about the history of Diti's sons. And he explains that the two doorkeepers were cursed by the Kumaras. Diti kept the embryos within her womb for 100 years, but due to the power of the embryos, the universe became dark. Seeing this, the demigods fearfully approached Brahma, prayed to him, and requested that he explain the cause of the universal darkness. Brahma related how the four Kumaras, after traveling throughout the universe, desired to visit Vaikuntha. Arriving at the entrance to that beautiful place, the Kumaras knew Vaikuntha to be pure, filled with beautiful residence, free from mundane sex desire, and free from the modes of material nature. Brahmadev then glorified Vaikuntha and hearing topics about Vaikuntha. He said that one should not give up hearing these topics. Human birth is especially sought after to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and one can achieve the supreme abode simply by becoming ecstatic when hearing the glories of the Lord. The four Kumaras pass through the first six gates of Vaikuntha, which is predominated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But at the seventh gate, they were stopped by the two gatekeepers. This is the gate before Lord Narayan's palace. The Kumaras, oldest of the sages, although they looked like young boys, were enraged by the discordant mentality of the gatekeepers. They cursed these guards for seeing enemies in a place where no enemies could exist. Thus, the gatekeepers were condemned to fall into the material world. Accepting the curse, the gatekeepers fell at the Brahmana's feet, expressing their fear of forgetting the Lord. At that moment, the beautiful, auspicious Lord appeared before the four Kumaras and the gatekeepers. He was fully decorated. The goddess of fortune accompanied him. He whom the sages had always meditated upon in their hearts was now manifest before their eyes. They smelled the fragrance of the tulsi leaves that a breeze carried from the Lord's lotus feet. This disturbed the Kumaras' minds. They gave up their Brahman realization, understanding that the realization of the Personality of Godhead is to be higher and sweeter. The Kumaras prayed to the eternal form of the Lord. They declared that they did not mind being born in any condition as long as they could hear and chant the Lord's glories. Shloka Anusharana. Yes?
There were gatekeepers in Vaikuntha. They were supposed to guard.
Yes.
And Kumaras got upset because they saw enemies. If they're gatekeepers, they should guard from
enemies. But were the Kumaras enemies?
No.
Yeah, so that's the whole point. It's obvious that the guy has big fangs and he's flying and, you know, like that. And then, you know, that's someone to stop. You know, so it's just an arrangement of the Lord, this whole pastime. That's the whole thing, because, but you know, the point is how do you have, if you have a kingdom, you have to have guards, even though there's no one to defeat you. Just like in Dwarka, who could defeat the Dwarka bosses? You know, there's no one on the planet to do that. But they still have a fort, you know, and still have guards and everything like that. It's just part of the flavor. If you don't have guards, then how you? It's just like if you're going to walk into the chamber where the king is, what do you expect to first see?
Guards,
yeah. Like that, you know. So it's just part of the flavor, you know. Yes.
So it all happened actually in Vaikuntha, because some people say it wasn't Vaikuntha, but they went through the seven gates of Vaikuntha, so they were actually at Vaikuntha itself.
Well, Prabhupada mentions that it happened outside, so yeah. It appears that inside that's where the main is. So the gates must be just to protect.
So they were,
but they were not inside that the area where the Lord was residing. So in that way, he's saying they're falling from outside. But the point is the principle that you never fall, because they fell and came right back.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like we're here and you don't know how long we'll be here. So that's anadi, right? But for these persons, it's known it will be X amount of births, right? And they'll do certain activities and then they'll come back. So we can see here, it's actually a pastime. Is that, yeah. But, you know, the problem makes the point is they fell from outside. But they're part of the scene, but they're not inside. They're outside. you know, for those who, you know, really get worried about it.
Once a person attends Vaikuntha, he wants to, like, you know, go to Goloka Vrindavan. Is it possible, or is always there in Vaikuntha?
Why would he go to Vaikuntha if he wants to go to Goloka?
No, residents of Vaikuntha, they want to attain Goloka Vrindavan. So
who said they want to attain Goloka Vrindavan?
They have that attraction to...
And where are you getting this information?
This is just a question, like, is it possible that...
No, but I'm saying, if you want to go to Vaikuntha, I mean Goloka, why would you go to Vaikuntha? Right? If you want to go to Burberry's, why would you go to Kmart? You know what I'm saying? It's just, why would that happen? You understand? Because in Vaikuntha, they are associating with Vaikuntha Vasis, and they're with the Lord, so they're fully satisfied. So why would they, where would they get the idea about Goloka? Right? You don't have scouts there recruiting or anything. You know what I'm saying? It's not the, you know, the NBA or something. Okay? So that's why it said, focus on Goloka. Don't get attracted by Vaikuntha. Otherwise, you go to Vaikuntha. Okay? Okay, Shloka Anushana, verses 1 to 10, the universe is covered by darkness. 12 to 22, the four Kumaras travel to Vaikuntha. 23 to 25, Lord Brahma glorifies Vaikuntha. 26 to 36, the sages are obstructed and curse the gatekeepers. 37 to 45, the Lord arrives. 46 to 50, the four Kumaras offer prayers to Lord Narayana. Verses 1 to 10, the universe is covered by darkness. Due to the power of the embryo in the womb of Diti, the universe became dark. The demigods fearfully approached Brahma, praying to him, and requested that he explains the cause of the universal darkness. Maitreya continues to explain to Vidura the reason for the fight between Lord Varaha and the demon Hiranyaksha. Right? Because the idea is, how does this come up that the Lord is fighting with this demon? Right? Like that, because we see that from the creation, right? The creation after the Virat Rup, right? So after the primary and the secondary creation, then you want to Swayambhuva Manu manifests, and so now his business is guiding mankind. Mankind lives on Earth. Earth is in the water. Really hard to, you know, populate the earth and guide them if it's the earth is underwater. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense? You know, because not everybody's Australian. So,
no.
You know, so therefore they have to, you know, get the earth out of the water. Right? Okay?
Yes.
Yeah. So there, then in doing that, then he runs into the demon. He fights the demon because there's a fight over the earth. So then, how did this come about? Where did this demon come from? Right? So then that's the... Does that make sense? So now that's how we get at this point. Yes?
We said that these two things happen in different manvantara.
Yes.
And they're always connected together.
Why not?
Because if the demon wasn't there in the first manvantara, how would this be connected?
No, but he's there in another one. In other words, the element of raising the earth from the water, that seems to be regularly done.
Okay.
Right?
So why should be...
So it just means it's much more exciting. This is just like, let's say you have a soap opera, okay? Now, that many things never happens to one family. It takes a whole community and a few of them to put those together, right? Does that make sense? But you have a Jewish grandmother, she knows all the stories from everywhere, and then she just tells those to the yeah. screenwriter, and it all happens to one family. And that's why you're watching. Okay? Where else do you get all these stories from? You know? Come on. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that you have the one thing and then you have the other, because they're related. So there's the principle of what's happening, but then there's also these other elements, because the Lord's activities are all to attract the mind of the living entity. So that he's lifted the earth, that's an attractive feature, but then there's a big fight, that's even more of an attractive feature. Right? Because the one is just the technical duty. But as Rupa Goswami mentions, that the conjugal and the fighting, or chivalry, these two, if you have them in your storyline, then people will be attracted. Right? So he's making the point that drama should folk, you know, have these two elements. Does that make sense? Yeah. No? Everyone loves a good fight, right?
Hollywood got this principle.
Yeah, so that means that, I wonder if that means in their previous life the Irish were all, you know, dramatists and stuff. Like,
theater of life.
Yes. Okay. Okay, quote, "My dear Vidura, Diti, the wife of the sage Kasyapa, could understand that the sons within her womb would be a cause of disturbance to the demigods. As such, she continuously bore the powerful semen of Kasyapa Muni, which was meant to give trouble to others, for 100 years. By the force of the pregnancy of Diti, the light of the sun and moon was impaired in all the planets. And the demigods of various planets, being disturbed by that force, asked the creator of the universe, Brahma, quote, what is the expansion of darkness in all directions, end quote. The fortunate demigod said, quote, O great one, just see this darkness, which you know very well, and which is causing us anxieties. Because the influence of time cannot touch you, there is nothing unmanifest before you. O god of the demigods, sustainer of the universe, head jewel of all the demigods in other planets. You know the intentions of all living entities in both the spiritual and material worlds. O original source of strength and scientific knowledge, all obeisances unto you. You have accepted the differentiated mode of passion from the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Undifferentiated means so the general principle of the mode of passion, because that's what he's in charge of. Right? Then it'll become specifically differentiated with all the living entities and how they will be engaged in the mode of passion. With the help of the external energy, you are born of the unmanifested source, all obeisances unto you. 1-5. Right, because the external energy is, remember, is that the lotus is manifest from the name of the Lord because of that aspect of passion in the living entities. Right? And that is then what generates the lotus. So that aspect of the primary creation then has that mix of the mode of passion in it. Mm-hmm. And so that generates everything. You know, all the whatever is the desire of the living entity can have, that's what's then created within that primary creation. Right? So that's Virat. Right? Then Brahma, then from that, a further continuation of that, then he's manifested. Right? As the non-differentiated incarnation of the mode of passion. Or the incarnation of the non-differentiated mode of passion. Because he is differentiated. He is different from the lotus. Yeah. Yes.
So, devotee or non-devotee living entities are all connected to the Lord.
Yes.
When they're fallen, it appears they're not, but they are.
No. We point out the differences because that's how we see them. Right? Because you have to start from the position the living entity can appreciate. But, as we see here and there, Prabhupada points out, and the different, the acharyas point out, or the speakers within the Bhagavatam point out, is factually there is no such thing as the material world. There's an inferior manifestation of God's creation, but there is no technically material world, because it's still God's world. Right? So the idea that there's anything that you could think or do that's separate from the Lord, that's actually atheistic. Because it's not real. It's that's why it's an illusion. So we'll say that's not scientific. They'll say, no, we're being scientific. We're none of this sentiment about God. We're saying, no, but it's sent about yourself. The point is, you're going to have a supreme. It's just whether it's someone else or whether it's yourself. You know, that's all. Because otherwise, to function, you have to have all these positions of power in place that the scientist never considers. Right? You have to have the potency of space and the potency of time to even accommodate the scientific arena. Because if those aren't there, science is just the observation and the consequent knowledge based on that observation. It's not time and space itself. So only because of those, everything that you see is going on. Now that is from the Lord. And the power to make that happen is the Lord enters into every atom between every atom. Right. And then his as time, then his, you know, the controller, the Mahamaya is there, Kali is there. And so then everything becomes pervaded by these three modes in the Lord's potency. Then you have the manifestations that we see. But the particular manifestation is based on your mental condition. So that means the subtle is even more pervading than the gross. Right? And then behind that, then there's the Lord. You understand? So Prabhupada says, therefore, those from the spiritual world don't actually see the material world. They just see it's an inferior, you know, it's just like going out into a part of the garage or an old shed that's on the property that belongs to the father. But it's, you know, hasn't been used for a while. It's pretty run down and, you know, stuff like that. Dirty cobwebs and, you know the standard stuff. But it's still part of, you don't see it that this is a different kingdom. No, it's still the property of the Father. It's still part of the does that make sense? But it's not the main house. So it doesn't have all those fine, nice manifestations. Does that make sense? So they just don't see a material world. We see the material world because we think there's something without Krishna. But if we see it connected to Krishna, it's not a material world. Does that make sense? So that's why we always have to balance that. We have to deal with our conditioning where we are now, but you have to see it in relation to the Lord. And ultimately, it's not about this. We only use this technique of understanding for those things that we do tend to see not connected to the Lord. But if we're seeing it connected to the Lord, there's no need of this intellectual endeavor to connect it. It's already connected. So that's why it's recommended. If you can just connect everything to Krishna, like the gopis did, you know, or what's his name? The Maharaj? Katvanga? In a moment, yeah. Maharaj Katvanga. That's the recommended process. You just see it immediately connected to the Lord.
Does that
make sense? So that's what we want. If you can't do that, then we follow the process of sadhana bhakti, and in that we study the scriptures, we practice, we worship the Lord, we associate with devotees, we chant, we preach, we do all these different activities. And by that, we gradually become purified and start to see slowly different aspects of our life in connection with the Lord. Until slowly, slowly, you know, it becomes the prominence. But once it gets to the stage where we see everything in connection with the Lord, it's still about the Lord, not about this knowledge of seeing it that way. The knowledge is a tool to get to that platform of seeing everything connected with the Lord. So that's the thing. We're not sentimental. We're very scientific. But at the same time, it's not about the science. It's about the relationship. Is that so? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 5 discusses Lord Vishnu, who is never seen by any creature and therefore called unmanifested as the source of the Veda and Lord Brahma. The Vedas are the original scientific knowledge for all departments of understanding. And this knowledge of the Vedas was first impregnated into the heart of Brahma by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Brahma is the original source of all scientific knowledge. He is born directly from the transcendental body of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, who is never seen by any creature of this material universe, and therefore always remains unmanifested. Brahma is stated here to be born of the unmanifested. He is the incarnation of the mode of passion in the material nature, which is the separated external energy of the Supreme Lord. Right, so the original scientific knowledge, that's the Veda, because it gives everything there. But it requires great intelligence to understand it. So these great sages contemplating that knowledge could see what you can do with it. Right? Therefore, then they give the Smriti Shastras, where discussions between them and other great personalities on these various branches of Vedic scientific knowledge. Right? In this way, then the Vedic literature has come down to us. But the Veda is the original of this. Then if others doing the same thing, seeing an aspect, contemplating, if it's as close it is to the truth, it means is that close it is to actually being Veda. Mm-hmm. And when it's not, it's just then we just call it speculation.
Yes.
Yeah. The demigods glorified and prayed to Lord Brahma. O Lord, all these planets exist within yourself, and all the living entities are generated from you. Therefore, you are the cause of this universe, and anyone who meditates upon you without deviation attains devotional service. Because he being an incarnation of the Lord, therefore meditating on him in this mood, then you develop that devotional service. But then that's got to continue on, because being an incarnation, then it should continue back. It becomes complete when you see his origin. Does that make sense? There is no defeat in this material world for persons who control the mind and senses by controlling the breathing process, and who are therefore experienced. Right? So if we're, means you breathe to perform activities, if all your activities are engaged in the Lord's service, that's the perfection of controlling the breath. Otherwise, to practice that concept, then the yoga system has methods to sit down and control the breath. Does that make sense? But the actual point is to use that. So the breath is controlled, not that it's just how one's breathing, but that the activities that one's performing with that breath, that's connected, so naturally the breath becomes connected. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. But by controlling the breathing process, and who are therefore experienced mature mystics, this is because by perfection in yoga they have attained your mercy. All the living entities within the universe are conducted by the Vedic directions, as a bull is directed by the rope attached to its nose. No one can violate the rules laid down in the Vedic literatures. Means you can say, I don't care and I'll do what I want, but it doesn't mean that the reaction won't be there. You know, just like you could go into a store and says, I don't care, I don't follow any rules, I do what I want, and take whatever you want. That means you can do it. And you look, see, I'm taking what I want. And then you notice, you know, down at the end, walking down the aisle are these guys in, you know, black suits with little curly things going into their ear. Right? You know, and then a reaction comes. So that's the funny thing is that because at the moment when I'm saying it, I seem to appear to be doing, I think I am independent. And then the reaction comes, and why is this happening to me? You know. Why are they crinkling my shirt? I don't deserve this. You know, like that. To the chief person who has contributed the Vedas, we offer our respect. Please look upon us mercifully, for we have fallen into a miserable condition because of the darkness. All our work has been suspended. Right? Because that's their whole point. Their work has been suspended, and they like doing their work. It's not so much, I mean, if ultimately that work is to please the Lord, so all this conversation is connected back to the Lord, because they have mentioned that. But their focus is on they can't do their activity. Yeah. Right? Because of that natural attachment to it. Does that make sense? So, as we said, being neophyte devotees, then they tend to be attached to the work that they're supposed to do. Yes. But because it's in connection with the Lord, it's still glorious. Therefore, why is it here in the Bhagavad? If it wasn't, it wouldn't be here. right? As fuel overloads a fire, so the embryo created by the semen of Kasyapa in the womb of Diti has caused complete darkness throughout the universe. 6-10. Srila Prabhupada explains the disruption in his purport to verse 9. Because of complete darkness throughout the universe, the regular activities and engagements of all the different planets were suspended. In the north and south poles of this planet, there are sometimes no divisions of day and night. Similarly, when the sunlight does not approach the different planets within the universe, there's no distinction between day and night. And so then, it's hard to do things when there's no day or night. Yes.
I'm wondering, what is the question actually? Because first they're asking, what is this expansion of darkness? But it seems they know the answer already. So.
But they want to know why that's there. Why it means there are plenty of conceptions within the universe. Why is this one different from all the other ones? Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's kind of ironic that she's trying to do the universe a favor by keeping these demons within her.
Yes.
And they're inconvenienced by no light. But in the meantime, when they come out, they're going to destroy this.
So that was better when it was worse.
Exactly.
Yeah, so the demigod should have been happy. It won't take the darkness.
One's going to knock the earth into the water, and the other one's going to take over even interested in it.
He's going to take over everybody.
Yeah.
You see, he took all the nine planets, tied them up, and then put them on the steps of his throne. So he steps on them to get up to his seat.
Yeah. And all the demigods are going to go hide.
But
the light's not on.
Yeah, so they can't do this. The point is that because of this conception, they're not going to be able to do their work anyway.
Exactly.
Whether they're inside or outside. Does that make sense? So, in other words, it's just like that's there. They know it's there, but why? What's unique about this? What's special about this? Because the Prajapatis have had so many kids, why this one is creating problem?
Verses 11-22. The four Kumaras travel to Vaikuntha. In response to the demigod's appeal, Lord Brahma related how the four Kumaras arrived at the entrance to Vaikuntha and witnessed the natural purity and sanctity of that place and its residents, who are free from mundane sex desire and from the modes of material nature. Maitreya said, thus Lord Brahma, who is understood by transcendental vibration, tried to satisfy the demigods, being pleased with their words of prayer. Verse 11, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, Brahma thought, oh, the ignorant praise me. I am useless to deliver them from this difficulty. End quote. He smiled just as an elder smiles at small children. Because they've dealt with him as the supreme, but not really in connection, as much in connection that he's representing the supreme as he is the supreme, because they figure he can solve the problem, right? Because that's what they want. They have a problem, they just want it solved. But they're not going through the full element of going back to the supreme Lord. But they've referred. But as we see in the Vedic context, the consideration that there's a supreme person who's in control of everything is not an uncommon element. All the schools of Vedic philosophy had that understanding. Right? It's just a matter of whether that's important as a goal or not. In other words, if God's there, he's the one that has to sanction things, then you want to act in a way that he sanctions it. But it's not about developing a relationship with him. Was that?
He's just part of the field.
Yeah, he's basically part of the field. He's just the biggest element.
Important.
Yeah.
So far.
Does that make sense? So that's all. Because we're used to that. There's no God, or there's totally. It's all about God. But here it's about you can know about God, but it's still not be that important to you.
But that doesn't make sense.
Being in the material world doesn't make sense.
That's true, but at least
it means you have greater knowledge.
Yeah, but at least if there's no God, then you can be a nonsense and a materialist. But if there is a God, it just is so mind-boggling to me why you would consider that not important, you know?
Let's say like this. A criminal, okay, they don't care about the government, right? Now, the general citizen does care about the government, but how much?
Yeah.
Just that they maintain peace and order so that you can go about your activities. So you know, okay, I cross here at the road and I drive and I park here and I don't park there and I do these different things that I shouldn't do, you know, like that. So that aspect, you're accepting that there is governance and that they are people and they make decisions and they meet and you can even see them on TV if you want, you know, like that. But it's not that that's an important part of your life. It's just, it's actual in effect. Just like, let's say you want to get a license, right? You have to stand in line and go there and talk to the person at the counter, submit the form. They have to be happy with your form. If they don't like something about your form, then they give it back to you. Right? And when they take, so you accept that I have to go through this person, but it's not that the person itself is important. Only their position is important. So like that, is that they're seeing him as God, not as a person. They know he's a person, but it's not about the personal aspect. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's a higher level.
Yeah.
It's a higher level of understanding. You know, so you're dealing with the Paramatma level of understanding, just they don't get to the Bhagavan platform. So actually, only Vedanta gets to the Bhagavan platform. All other schools deal on the Paramatma or Brahman platform. You know, with a touch of part, like yeah. Gotama and Vaisheshika, there's the concept that God's there, but he really is not a major player at all. Right? But then you see in the next levels that he is a player. But it's still not important him as a person. Right? So only in Vedanta, then Bhagavan realization actually becomes real.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's just a progression.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the two extremes are always the easiest to understand.
Yeah.
So that's why in the Vedic culture it's maybe more difficult to understand, is because people do know, people do deal in proper etiquette and this and that. You know, does that make sense? It's just like this. Let's say you have an American gangster, okay?
Yes.
More people will watch that than a British gangster.
Yes.
Why? Because the British gangster speaks nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we told you there's going to be reaction, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like that. Well, the other guy's yelling and screaming and this and that, so you know, it gets more coffee. Does that make sense? So we can understand the extremes very well. The middle is much more. So that's why the Vedic culture is harder to understand, because everyone has that full knowledge and full character, but they're still materialists.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lord Brahma said, "My four sons, Sanaka, Sanatana, Sanandana, and Sanat Kumar, were born from my mind, are your predecessors. Sometimes they travel throughout the material and spiritual skies without any definite desire." Right? They're just, you know, because being on the platform of Shanta, you know, being liberated, they don't necessarily do something because they have a specific desire to do. You know, it's just they have no attachment to anywhere, so they just happen to be moving, because if you're not attached to any place, you just move about. Right? Thus, after traveling all over the universes, they also entered into the spiritual sky, for they were freed from all material contamination. In the spiritual sky, there are spiritual planets known as Vaikunthas, which are the residents of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His pure devotees, and are worshipped by the residents of all the material planets. In the Vaikuntha planets, all the residents are similar in form to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They engage in devotional service to the Lord without desires for sense gratification. In the Vaikuntha planets is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original person and who could be understood through the Vedic literature. He is full of the uncontaminated mode of goodness, with no place for passion or ignorance. He contributes religious progress for the devotees. 12 through 15. The residents of Vaikuntha are described in Srila Prabhupada's purports to verse 14 and 15.
The residents are all like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. In the Vaikuntha planets, Krishna's plenary feature as four-handed Narayana is the predominating deity, and the residents of Vaikuntha are also four-handed, just contrary to our conception here in the material world. Nowhere in the material world do we find a human being with four hands. In Vaikuntha Loka, there is no occupation but the service of the Lord, and this service is not rendered with a purpose, although every service has a particular result, right? So I don't have a purpose in getting it done, in other words, other than the please Lord for myself. But there's a purpose to everything done, so it's to please the Lord. So that's the difference, because the Mayavadis, no service is rendered without a purpose. So since you're giving up purpose, you're giving up endeavor. But in Vaikuntha, they don't give up endeavor because there is a particular result to be gained from a service. Does that make sense? Because Visesha is accepted. See, that's the problem with the Mayavadis, that because they don't accept Visesha or uniqueness, then you're going to have, you know, nothing.
Yes.
But when you accept Visesha, then you're naturally going to have all the facilities that come with having uniqueness.
When you say they don't accept Visesha, what do we mean?
I
mean,
but they don't accept Visesha because their idea is it's all Brahman.
Yes.
So if there is any difference, it's illusion because there is no difference.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So that's generally the how you say the strong Sankirtan point when you're talking with a Mayavadi. Because if it's all one, then their wallet and your wallet are one.
Yes.
Many devotees in the past have used this.
Yeah.
Always taken a few, you know, bills from them. And they, if they're strong in the point, they have to agree.
They have to give it.
Yeah. So devotees always find that funny, that they are so stubborn.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah.
So that's their point, is that it's all illusion.
Yeah.
So it doesn't actually exist. But we say it does exist. But just the Visesha here is not very special. Right? Well, the Visesha in the spiritual world, now that's special. Because it's not governed by the modes. Here it is. So it doesn't, it doesn't, what it manifests is much less than. So,
yes.
There's a problem.
For them, there is a problem because there's Vishay. I mean, there's different. I mean,
that's why we make a distinction. Means ultimately, impersonalist means they're not accepting the personal aspect. But for a Brahmavadi, they accept the personal form. It's just that personal form is not any more important than, you know, the tree, because it's all Brahman. It's all transcendence. You know what I'm saying? So they can follow etiquette and dealings and everything like the four Kumaras. Like that.
Yeah.
But it's not that there's a difference in experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there's the etiquette you follow, you respect the Lord, you worship the Lord. Like that.
Yeah.
Is that me? So the Mayavadis are the ones that we don't appreciate. Yeah. Although every service has a particular result, the devotees never aspire for the fulfillment of their own desires. Their desires are fulfilled by rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord. In the Vaikuntha world, the spiritual sky, only the mode of goodness in its pure form exists. The Lord and his devotees reside in the Vaikuntha planets, and they are of the same transcendental quality, namely Shuddha-sattva, the mode of pure goodness. The Vaikuntha planets are very dear to the Vaishnavas, and for the progressive march of the Vaishnavas towards the kingdom of God, the Lord himself helps his devotees. Right? So that was the point. He mercifully contributes to their spiritual development. In those Vaikuntha planets, there are many forests which are very auspicious. In those forests, the trees are desire trees, and in all seasons they are filled with flowers and fruits, because everything in the Vaikuntha planets is spiritual and personal. In the Vaikuntha planets, the inhabitants fly in their airplanes, accompanied by their wives and consorts, and eternally sing of the character and activities of the Lord, which are always devoid of all inauspicious qualities. While singing the glories of the Lord, they deride even the presence of the blossoming Madhavi flowers, which are fragrant and laden with honey. Right? So when their comparison, now Vaikuntha is so great, but you see the Vaikuntha Vasis don't even care for that greatness compared to hearing about the glories of the Lord. Right? So just the humming of the bees and all that, and the others, that is more important than the greatness of the manifestation. Because the manifestation is just the physical situation.
Yes.
Then there's going to be, you know, what you do with it and your perspective on it. Right? So the most important thing is that even though it's so grand and great, still the glories of the Lord are the essential point. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So therefore we see is that the position of the devotees in Vaikuntha and the position of the devotees in Goloka is the same in principle, just the preference of the aspect of majesty. But it's all about the Lord, the glories of the Lord, serving the Lord. That remains the same. So for all Vaishnavas, you can discuss pure devotional service. It's not a problem. No sampradaya, no group will have a difficulty with this. Now the specific deity that they want to worship and the particular mood of that worship, that's where the difference will be. But that's a detail. Because the main thing is that the pure devotion. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. You want to say?
It's like it becomes a problem in India. The followers of the Valva Sampradaya, are they complaining that Lakshmi would do certain...
No, but the thing is that's secondary, that's detail. The primary is, do they agree that exclusive devotion to the Supreme Lord is the proper position? So hearing, chanting, remembering, the nine processes of devotional service, do they accept that that's actually perfection? That's the real Swadharma of the soul. That they'll accept. And all the glories mentioned in the Shastra, they're all glories. Now, which one of them they prefer, that's another thing. You know, just like a whole group sits down at a meal. Do they all eat the exact same amount of food and in the exact same way? Like somebody takes this chapati and the dal, you know, and eats it. Some puts it that in the sabji. Some put the sabji into the dal. You know what I'm saying? Some eats one than the other. So, I mean, each one will be eating slightly differently. So now we're going to say this one's correct and all others are bogus? You know? So as soon as you bring those out, they'll have to accept that. Now, what they're saying, this is what they want, that's what their taste is. So because of that taste, for them, that's the highest principle. And these others aren't. So it's a difference in flavor. But if they're going to argue philosophical points, then the only thing that includes all of them is the Chitta Veda Veda Tattva. So even they're dealing with Dvait Advait, still the point is that they happen simultaneously. The Lord is the Lord of contradictory qualities. So that means they're simultaneously going on, even though they're different. So their philosophy can't explain that. So therefore, if they want to complain about someone else, what's the point?
So basically, on principle, we agree with the sampradayas.
We agree with, means up to the level of liberation, we agree with bona fide impersonalists, because it's the same path to get out of the material world, all the Vaishnava schools. Up to the position of pure devotion, then we agree with also all the Vaishnava sampradayas.
And then the
but where we want to render that service, that would be the difference. Does that make sense? So we'll be in Golokin Braj. The Balabas will be in Goloka, you know, in not in Braj, but in Vrindavan, right? And then the Shris and Madhvas, and the Nimbarkas will also, I mean, the Vishnu Swamis, the Balabas, then they'll be more the kind of there, that border, the same kind of place, but with the parental rasa will be prominent, you know. And then within the Vaikuntha, it can be anywhere from Dwarka on down, depending upon what's their mood, what form of the Lord. Like you see some of them, I don't know if you've ever seen deities where you have Krishna with four arms playing the flute with Rukmini.
You have some temples like that. So, in other words, they're Narayan worshippers, but they like the form of Krishna. So for them, it's Lakshmi and Narayan are performing these pastimes of Radha and Krishna.
So Abrahamic religions, they don't go beyond Pranamoy, basically, or...
The Abrahamic don't go beyond Pranamoy, no. That's where they're situated.
Yeah.
They're situated in that. So what we see is that, because Hamat means, it's just you have to be able to, you're trying to get people off the self-centered platform into accepting the community concept.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that was done, and then they have a strong community, right? The next group, I mean, was then working with being again more self-centered and materialistic, so you're trying to get rid of that and bring it back to the higher principles, because they already have a strong social system now. But they're using it just for sense gratification, so you have to bring out ideals. But as we mentioned, ideals without the form, then is still pranamoy. It's a higher form of pranamoy. Right? Like that. But then at the same time, in doing that, yeah, so then how it was given then, you had community with the higher ideals. Like that. You know, it's transformed into higher ideals with no community.
Yes.
Like that. Then the other group, then they got distracted by, so there's some sense of community, but worshipping all varieties of demigods, you know, or all whatever it is made up form. So to bring it back to that, you know, monotheistic. Does that make
yes.
sense? So they're just introducing these things so they never have to get beyond pranamoy.
Yes.
Because you don't see that everything's very dynamic there. Because
mm-hmm.
how is he impressing people that they just... What was it? His philosophy was so great, that's why they were following.
No,
as you take, you know, one loaf of bread and feed a whole
yeah.
stadium with it. That's why they're coming. You understand? And the other one is, if you don't accept this one, then, you know, we'll separate your head from your shoulders.
Yes.
You know.
Detach you.
Yes. Yes. You know, so, I mean, all, you know, very inspiring.
Yeah. Motivating.
Yeah, motivating, yeah. You understand?
So you can have a follower of these religions who is beyond the pranamoy.
It's rare, but generally there's a... What do you call it? Anathemy?
Anatomy? Anomaly?
No.
Anathema.
Oh. You have the principle of anathema.
Okay.
Is that if they get too far, stray too far from pranamoy,
then
they become outcasts.
Yes.
You know, depending upon the political correctness of the time, that may be prison, may be, you know, a nice little bonfire, or you just have to disappear out into the forest.
Yes.
You know, so. Yeah. Yeah, because what happens if you go beyond pranamoy? Pranamoy means I'm comfortable in pranamoy because I can get what I want from it, because everybody else is being nice. If everybody's not nice, I can't get what I want. So if I start introducing duties, what's supposed to do, then I'm going to look at, I have to do these things. So what I'm going to start to doubt, will I be able to get whatever I want? So that's why people don't really like taking the step from pranamoy to manamoy. You know, hence, you know, the discussions whether varnashram actually applies to us as devotees.
Yeah.
So that's the whole, but you see, pranamoy discussions of any, you know, contemporary concept, that's open season.
Yeah.
That's just, of course, that's standard, of course. But if you bring in, what do you mean? That's mundane, as if, you know, these other forms are spiritual.
Pranamoy is like, we can discuss anything, you know.
Yeah, that's the whole point, because it's open for mental speculation and sense gratification, which is the purpose of pranamoy.
Yeah.
Is that we'll work together to make everything
enjoyable.
Oh, okay, I was going to say all right, but.
Yeah. That's
okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
And pranamoya always remains impersonal on a personal level.
It's impersonal, though you can have the concept of God included in it. You can have theistic moralism. But there's theistic moralism where you actually, you know, there's that you have levels of theistic moralism. You have theistic moralism where you're still actually atheistic, but it works good for the public if there is a supreme authority. Because if there is one, then people aren't so much anxiety. They'll work hard. They'll cooperate because there is a supreme, so I should do what's right. And I'm not worried about next life because they'll take care of it. But it's not that they really, there's actually any devotional sentiment, or it can be they don't even really believe in them at all. It's just a nice concept.
It's a concept, yeah.
Yeah, because like even the atheist believes in a supreme. Like you could say to the, you know, an atheist, may the force be with you, and they'll be happy, you know, like that. You know, there's some supreme pervading everything, like that. They're cool with those things. But it's just, it shouldn't be a person. Like that. So that's the lowest level of this. Because, so, otherwise you have atheistic morality, which is generally what the, because you've separated church from state, that's generally what's always professed. Personally, they may be a theistic moralist, but officially, in their occupation, they have to be an atheistic moralist. Like that. And then you have the next level where they believe in God, but as we said in these Vedic systems, which then you believe in God as the order supplier, the one that arranges everything. So you follow the laws, you'll get what you want. So it's just only for the karmis. Right? Then you have that there's the supreme, but they only accept the Brahman platform. The other one, they accept the Paramatma. Right? And so then they move up, is that the supreme, and then they'll perform their activities for liberation. Then you have the devotees who understand the Bhagavan platform. So, generally what you're doing when you're dealing in pranamoy will only give you a glimpse of the absolute truth. So it's not actually very developed. That's why you see in your contemporary religions, there's a concept of God, but it's not very well developed. They can't figure out how much God is God and how, you know, they can't figure out, is God in control of everything or not? Right? And is people connected with him? Are they God themselves or is he different? So they can't work these things out. You know, or others is, okay, God's God and the, you know, the prophet is different, but at the same time as nobody has any form. You know, so it's like, hey, you know, how does this work?
Yeah.
And the others, it's God's creation. He gave it to us, and we're going to make the best of it. You know? So at least there's, you know, at least it's practical, right? You know, you don't see them killing each other over any discrepancies, right? It just doesn't happen. Yeah, it's interesting. They don't fight and kill each other. All the others, that any branch different than them, they fight.
They kill.
Oh, that's another thing.
Go away.
Yeah. But generally, you leave them alone. Yeah. Go away. Does that make sense? So, that's the thing, is it's three different flavors of one thing. So, they're all monotheistic. But from the platform of pranamoya, the realization of Godhead is not very great. There's some concept of it, which is, you know, which is good, which is inspiring, drives, you know, not drives them forward, but they progress with that. But it's not that dynamic that it doesn't keep them from getting distracted by the mundane.
They get attached to the mundane.
They get attached to the mundane,
so,
and then it's just the path of, you know, I mean, they don't even talk about getting out of the material world. They just want to get to a nicer aspect of the material world. So they don't distinguish actually between spiritual and material. Yeah, you know, between heaven and hell they do, but not between spiritual and material. Does that make sense? So there's a concept, there's soul, there's God, you know, there's the great personalities, but the actual definitions they don't. Does that make sense? So it's only at monomoy that then they become defined. Now how much you care about, now what you want to do with them, karma, jnana, or bhakti, now that's up to you. Does that make sense? So that means human, that's why it says human life begins at Dharma. Because below that is just nice animals. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just like, you know, it's like the person's complaining, you know, like we were saying before, the guy says, you know, everything's perfect when he's complaining with his friends. He complains about the human race or the rat race.
Right,
you know, like that. Rats live together, they cooperate, they got bosses. They got the, you know, there's one head rat, you know, and then they all do, you know, their rat stuff.
There's one British politician, his slogan was, even if you win the rat race, you're still a rat.
Yes, yes. Yeah, like that. You know, or, you know, packed in like sardines, or working like, you know, ants, or, you know, I mean, they take these finer... You know, in other words, these animals that have more of a sense of pranamoy.
Yeah.
And then those are used as the social example. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
So,
when the king of bees hums in a high pitch, singing the glories of the Lord, there is a temporary lull in the noise of the pigeon, the cuckoo, the crane, the chakravaka, the swan, the parrot, the partridge, and the peacock. Such transcendental birds stop their own singing simply to hear the glories of the Lord. So that's the point, is what he's making. There's no distinction there. So these birds that are actually much bigger than that, then they stop to listen to the king of bees sing the glories of the Lord. Like that. So, yeah. 16 to 18. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments in verse 18. The birds immediately stop chirping. Oh, there is glorification of the Lord. Let us be silent and listen. What is it? The king of bees, qualified to sit on the garland of the Lord, is humming, Hari, Hari, caused by the sound of his vibrating wings. This is equal to glorification of the Lord. Right. So now why the king of bees? Because he's qualified to sit on the Lord's garland. So that means he knows the glories of the Lord, because he's always there and seeing them and smelling them and appreciating them. So then the others want to live, because, you know, you don't have a peacock sitting on the garment of the Lord. But, you know, so the bee, he's got a special position. Otherwise, why the bee? You know. Srila Prabhupada states in his purport that verse 18 reveals the absolute nature of Vaikuntha. There is no difference between the birds there and the human residents. The situation in the spiritual sky is that everything is spiritual and variegated. Spiritual variegatedness means that everything is animate. There is nothing inanimate. Even the trees, the ground, the plants, the flowers, the birds, and the beasts are all on the level of Krishna consciousness. So that's why the conditioned soul can't function in the spiritual world. Not that he wouldn't be happy to. It's just that no one else there is happy with that. Right? So that's why then, so that one doesn't disturb the devotees, one is placed in the material world. Lord Brahma continued speaking to the demigods. Although flowering plants like the Mandara, Kunda, Kurabaka, Utpala, Champaka, Arna, Punaga, Nageshwara, Bakula, Lily, and Parijata are full of transcendental fragrance, they are still conscious of the austerities performed by Tulsi, for Tulsi is given special preference by the Lord, who garlands himself with Tulsi leaves. So even though there, they can add to the decoration. But Tulsi's in a special position because he's always there. He's on his feet. He's there as the garland. Everything he eats, and Tulsi's there. You know, it's not like for the Lord's meal you put a nice big lotus flower on top of it. So it's Tulsi. So even though they're so special, all the auspicious, you know, trees, they all understand the specialness of Tulsi here.
Yes.
Referring to verse 19, Srila Prabhupada describes the glorious position of Tulsi and the most important feature of the spiritual world. The most important thing about the spiritual world is that there is no envy among the devotees there. This is true even among the flowers, which are all conscious of the greatness of Tulsi. In the Vaikuntha world, entered by the four Kumaras, even the birds and flowers are conscious of service to the Lord. Okay, so why is this brought out here? Why are we bringing this point out? Because he could have just described the glories of Vaikuntha. Like, because generally in most descriptions, we don't hear about that all the birds stop because the bee is king of bees is humming, or all the flowers are there, but they're conscious of Tulsi's position, right? And about the equalness between that, it doesn't matter if they're animals, humans, or what form of life they are. It's because there's no envy. Okay. Now what happened? Now what's going to happen in his further discussion? What are we going to see?
Animosity.
That's the problem that comes up. That's why then the four Kumaras say you don't belong here. Because Vaikuntha is a place without envy. Why are you here? So that's the real essential point of because Vaikuntha, there's no anxiety. Why is there no anxiety? Because there's no envy.
Yes.
You understand?
Yes.
So the attitude is there. Because you have the situation. But then the attitude is more important. That's why Prabhupada starts with the spirit. The spirit is correct. Then you can understand the environment, the goals, and the activities to gain those goals. But if the attitude's not right, it doesn't matter. Right? That's the whole thing. Like when you're dealing with the child, it's a matter of developing the proper attitude. From the proper attitude, then you can get proper behavior, proper understanding, and everything. Does that make sense? Let's say you have someone you're working with, very expert in their service, but their attitude is not nice. You're uncomfortable.
Yes.
Now let's say you have someone whose attitude is fabulous, but they're not at all expert. They're nice to be around. They're fun, you know? Okay, you'll do it.
We can work with it.
Yeah, you understand? So that's the whole thing, is the attitude is the most... This other is because they have that attitude of non-enviousness, which means non-envious of the Lord, non-envious of the other living entities, non-envious of themselves, right? Because impersonalism means you're envious of yourself. I'm a person, I'm envious of that. I want to extinguish my existence. That's the Mayavada, right? So because there's non-envy, therefore, then you can function in this wonderful place. Because it's just like this. Let's say everybody has nothing. Then you basically see very minimal envy. But as soon as somebody walks in with a good quality tire, you know, to throw on his plastic, you know, sheet roof, then there's envy. Why he's got that tire. Do you understand? So that's the whole thing. Is that immediately, as soon as someone has something, then envy starts. But if there's nothing to have, then there's no envy. Right? But in Vaikuntha, because they have no envy as individuals, therefore there can be unlimited opulence and everybody's comfortable.
That's why it breaks down when the West comes with their material opulence and spreads it out on the
world. Yeah, because it generates envy. It's just like one interesting thing is that, from what I understand, I don't know if this is all throughout, but in your villages, no one in the village owned land. They belonged to the village. The village had a certain amount of land. Like, there's the government had given, the kings had given this much land to this village. And so everybody in the village then, according to the capacity, would work the land and do all that. And then, from that profit from that, then everybody would be taken care of. But in a system like that, how do you make profit as a businessman? Right? So therefore, the British introduced the concept of individual land ownership. One, you can take tax. Two, there's buying and selling of it. You know, all these different things can happen. And then you have to take a loan. You know, so all these business opportunities come up by this one thing.
You can exploit it.
Yeah, you can exploit it. Because who would get the benefit? Immediately the British would. You know, but then the long term, then hey, it's not working out. But, you know... The guy now doesn't care for next generation because, you know, that's their problem. So does that make sense? So when you have this element of, then you can have great opulence and it can all be used. But as soon as there's the concept, this is mine, that's when the problem starts. But if it's all for Krishna, then there's no problem. Right? And you can even, because it's for Krishna, there can be individual... quota of this is mine to use, because even you say, even you take pure communism, it's not that in pure communism that your clothes belong to the community, you know?
Socks.
Socks. they belong to everybody, means everybody gets the benefit of the fragrance.
Yeah, no, it's actually true.
It means they actually share socks.
No, but it's just if you see a pair of socks, you know.
The common laundry.
Hmm?
The laundry room, whatever is left out there.
It's the socks. Okay, that anybody can use. Okay.
That's just the reality.
Wow.
Like if you see a shirt, you leave it.
But if you see socks, you take it.
Yeah, it's socks.
Wow. Very important, fine point.
It's a fine point.
Yeah. I guess devotees never didn't used to have that problem so much because they didn't have socks.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
At least in India, it's just like, you know, socks is a new thing. You know?
Yeah.
Okay. Their desires are fulfilled by rendering transcendental loving service for the Lord. In the Vaikuntha world, the spiritual sky, only the mode of goodness in its pure form exists. Right? Did I skip a page or something? Did I go back to the top of the page?
I think you went to the top of the page.
Yeah, I did go back to the top of the page.
Sorry.
Oh, we're down at the bottom of the page.
Yeah,
okay. That's the problem. It's ever fresh.
Yeah, exactly.
It's new.
It's
and
nice,
I, wow, this is cool.
Nice point.
Yeah. Okay. The most important thing about the spiritual world is that there's no envy among the devotees there. This is true even among the flowers, which are all conscious of the greatness of Tulsi. In the Vaikuntha world, entered by the four Kumaras, even the birds and flowers are conscious of service to the Lord. The inhabitants of Vaikuntha travel in their airplanes made of lapis lazuli, emerald, and gold. Although crowded by their consorts, who have large hips and beautiful smiling faces, they cannot be stimulated to passion by their mirth and beautiful charms. The ladies in Vaikuntha planets are as beautiful as the goddess of fortune herself. Such transcendentally beautiful ladies, their hands playing with lotuses and their leg bangles tinkling, are sometimes seen sweeping the marble walls, which are bedecked at intervals with golden borders, in order to receive the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right. So, even though there's no dust, they're still doing just to get the favor of the Lord. Right. So the point there is that even though all these aspects are there, which in the material world will be seen as opportunities for sense gratification, because everybody's seeing everything in relationship to the Lord, there's no desire for sense gratification. Right?
That's nice.
Does that make sense? So in other words, the airplanes aren't too big. They're comfortable. You know, they're not like a Cadillac or something. They're comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
The goddesses of fortune worship the Lord in their own gardens by offering tulsi leaves on the coral-paved banks of transcendental reservoirs of water. While offering worship to the Lord, they can see on the water the reflection of the beautiful faces with raised noses, and it appears that they have become more beautiful because of the Lord's kissing their faces. So, even in their own gardens, they take the tulsi leaves and on the bank of the water, they're offering worship and stuff. Like that. Mm-hmm. And then because of that interaction of pleasing the Lord, therefore they become more beautiful. Because that's the thing. The Lord is manifest in a wonderful way because of the devotion of the devotee. And then because of applying that devotion, they become more beautiful. So therefore the Lord, in response to that, becomes more beautiful. So there's an unlimited competition in developing in this way. 20:22. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in his purport to verse 20 the nature of the residence of Vaikuntha. Having described the beauty of the surrounding gardens, Brahma describes the beauty of the city in the center. Vaikuntha is filled with airplanes made of gold, obtained simply by surrender unto the Lord's feet. Right? Because they don't have to do austerities forever like one would have to do here to get control of such airplanes. They are simply surrendered to the Lord, therefore they can control the airplanes. Right? So simply by their bhakti, they're controlling the airplanes. While here, you have to have great austerity and tapasya to be able to control an airplane, and that will be for a limited period of time. But there, because of their surrender, it's unlimited.
Yes.
by bhakti, not by jnana or karma, even though performed perfectly. Right? So they do everything perfect, but it's not because of the perfection of how they're doing it. It's by the bhakti that they're applying doing that things perfectly. Because the Lord, He's the origin of perfection, so it's not that He is impressed on how well someone does something. Because He can do that better. Right?
Yes.
But it's a matter of the devotion of which is performed, even if it's a very simple activity, it pleases the Lord. Right? So it's not because of their knowledge, because we said the Lord is known by knowledge. So it's not because of their great knowledge or great skill that the Lord is pleased. It's because of the devotion.
So known by knowledge just means knowledge, and then the result is the surrender.
That results in surrender, but in that surrender they use knowledge as a medium of worship. Because they offer their prayers, and those prayers will be based on the glories of the Lord, on His greatness and like that. In those persons engaged in the bliss of worship of the Lord, there is room for the bliss of Brahman. As mentioned previously, what to speak of material pleasure? Right? So, there's room for it. They could get into that. Right? But as said here, the most beautiful women with broad hips and smiling faces cannot produce passion for their naturally attractive smiles, glances and words in the men who have absorbed their minds in Krishna. Vaikuntha is filled with such people. So you don't get more beautiful than is what's here. Right? So in that, then, but no one is thinking about sense gratification. Right? But it's not that they don't interact as husband and wife. Right, they'll speak as husband, speak as wife, but it doesn't generate this desire for material passion. Right? It's just a nice atmosphere in which to serve the Lord. The Lord's with Lakshmi, the devotees are with their wives, so it all works out very nicely. Is that? Yeah. Okay, so we'll stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaura Pena. So then here's where the concept comes from, that ladies could be happy all the time.
From Vaikuntha?
Yeah, because they are. You're thinking, why are these
Vaikuntha? Yeah.
Because in Vaikuntha they are.
So the key is God consciousness.
Yes, that's the key.
Go to Vaikuntha and be happy.
Because here it's not going to happen.
It's too boring. Happy all the time.
Know what they're up to doing. It's great for the moment, and the next moment, because, you know, that's the thing, is visesha, you know, creates the happiness, it's also the social unhappiness. Because that visesha, you have to do something else. And the happiness from the previous one is not there anymore. Well, it's Vaikuntha, you do something special, it remains, and then you do something more, you add more and more. But here it's there, and then it drops off. And then there. So as long as you keep adding, and so it's basically there, then that's considered good, you know. But as soon as it drops off, and there's, you know.
So that's the problem, you can never enjoy, because you have to keep working to keep it from dropping. So the purpose never really.
No, that's there for the, you know, the examples of the donkey.
Yeah. It's funny when you look at it like that. It's so simple.
It is simple. But, you know, but it's what one has to do. You know, that's the way it works. Because you see, Krishna, when he's saying, it's not that when you get beyond this Vaikuntha that you don't see those same elements.
Mm.
But there it always brings out ecstasy, and here it brings misery. Because Krishna's thinking that Radharani is not talking to him, because either, you know, she's stunned in ecstasy, or she knows about the dream. And she's not pleased.
Exactly.
One other gopi is enough, let alone 16,108 of them. Like that. So that it works.